بسم الله، السلام عليكم guys. السلام عليكم. It is Wednesday night, and you already know what it is. It's Wednesday night. It's our Wednesday night live stream, and I want to see who's in the house, who's in the building. Let me know if you can hear me. Let me know if you can hear me loud and clear, and if you can see me. I want to see where you guys are attending from. So we've got Ghana. We've got a Ghanaian sister in the house. Where is everybody else based? We've got Ghana in the house. Who else is here? Inshallah, tonight's live stream is going to be all about homophobia. And we're going to be looking at an article that a sister wrote, and we're going to be dissecting it. I'm going to open the call lines briefly because I won't be on here for too long. Tonight, inshallah, is not going to be a three-hour live stream, just so you know. It's not going to be a three-hour live stream. We're going to keep it to under an hour, inshallah. What we'd like to get as many people here sharing their views, having something to say on the topic as much as possible. But I have had a full day of filming today, so I cannot do the 3 hour thing. And also we've got Friday night coming up as well, inshallah. So I want to preserve my energy for that. But I want to thank every one of you that has subscribed to the channel. I want to thank every one of you that has been commenting on the videos, that has liked the videos, that has shared your views. I read all the comments, mashallah. Yes, that's how sad I am. I read all the comments, and it's always interesting for me to see the types of opinions there are out there. It's really, really interesting for me to see what people think, what they agree with, what they don't agree with, what resonates with them, what doesn't resonate with them. So jazakallahu khair and all of you for sharing. I do appreciate it. I do read them all. And yeah, it helps me to get the temperature for what's going on the channel, right? What's it all about? Homophobia. We're going to just share the link with some sisters, inshallah. Guys, I'll put the link in the chat as well for you to come on after I've sort of shown you the feature presentation, if you like. So it might not mean what you think, Junaid. Okay, so let's not make the algorithm unhappy. Let's not do that. Let's be cool. Let's be cool, because this means something different to what you may think, inshallah. All right, so we've got Stockholm, Sweden in the picture. We've got Oslo, Norway, mashallah. So Europe in the building. We've got Ibadan, Nigeria. Thank you for clarifying specifically where in Nigeria. Love that. We've got Belize in the house, alhamdulillah. We've got some of our regulars. Yes, yes. We've got some of our regulars in the building. I recognize you guys from the last streams, alhamdulillah. Excellent, excellent, excellent. Midlands, UK. All right, let's jump in and see what this homophobia is all about, inshallah. I'm going to show you a post, the post that inspired this stream, and inshallah we'll get a chance to to talk about it, right? To see what we think of the topic, and see if it has any relevance for us today. Okay, so I'm going to share the screen, inshallah. Guys, make sure that you hit the like button as you come in. If you're not subscribed, then subscribe to the channel. We're on our way to 50k subs, and you guys can help us get there, inshallah. So please do not be shy. What? Do not be backwards about coming forwards. That's what I want to say. All right, let's share this now. Bismillah. Okay. Okay, you guys ready? All right. Yes, some of you, mashallah, you subscribed a long time ago. I know. Barakallahu feekum. All right, let's go in with this. Let me know if you can see the screen. We're going to share this particular piece by Huda Nu'man. And for those who are interested in this kind of thing, this post was on the Sisters Corner official. And the Sisters Corner is basically a group of sisters who are upon Quran and Sunnah and upholding traditional values for the younger generation, mashallah. So they're doing some really amazing work. Check out their Instagram, the Sisters Corner official. This addressing homophobia was posted on their Instagram. Okay, so you can go over there to get more of this type of thing. So what is this homophobia that we're talking about? It's a noun, and it's the modern society has an irrational fear of stay-at-home moms. This is her position. So let's read together. The Global Gender Gap Report, published in July this year, ranked Pakistan at 145 with regards to gender parity in terms of economic participation and opportunity. All right, you guys can all see. We together? Okay, cool. Noting that Pakistan is the country where women have the smallest share of senior managerial and legislative roles. Now, instead of immediately seeing this as a negative, a critical thinker would ask, why is this problematic? Why must the ultimate empowerment of women be linked to their financial contribution? This argument posits that a woman's earning power is an indicator of her well-being and discounts the enormous mental and physical strains it levies upon her. In her book, Hard Labor, The Sociology of Parenthood, Caroline Gatterall shares her attempt to try to understand the lived experience of those who combine parenthood with paid work. The study finds that combining the two proves to be incredibly difficult. Most of the women had to return to work 12 weeks after giving birth, despite it being incredibly difficult for them. They not only found it hard to give time to their partners, which potentialized a strain in their relationships, the women were also tired physically and suffered mentally due to the dual load. The question then becomes whether the lack of a system of provision for women benefits women or corporations. So it's noteworthy that while women's earning power may be limited, their spending power is not necessarily restrained. The list of countries with low economic participation of women includes Qatar as well, whereas Qatari women enjoy some of the world's most luxurious lifestyles. A simple visit to a mall will elucidate this argument, for many of the stores and brands target the female consumer. If women were truly economically underprivileged, there would not be a huge market for luxury goods that cater to women. It is unfair to jump to immediate conclusions without taking into account the full context and culture that this economic gender disparity is operating in. In traditional societies, men assume the role of breadwinner and provider. Why must the woman who is provided for and taken care of subject herself to the misery of corporate slavery and the strains of the rat race? So you guys, these are points for you guys to argue. You got to jump in and you got to either say, no, I agree, I disagree completely, or I agree with this, or whatever it is that you think, okay? So this is just something for us to discuss tonight, okay? It's not necessarily my position, but I've not heard this position argued in this way, and I thought it would be very interesting for us. So further, it's misconstrual, the argument that views a lack of women's economic participation as an unfortunate reality falsely infers that rewards can only be monetary. Thus, women exchanging labor for money is seen as praiseworthy, while women investing in their families in exchange for their family's devotion, love, and care is regarded as concerning. Such an understanding can only be reached by a society that centers money as the ultimate contributor to a good life. While material capital has its value, it is not necessary that all members of society be involved in its pursuit. Whew. Okay, guys, again, please put your comments, your thoughts in the comments, and then I'm going to go back through the comments and then open up the call lines, inshallah. So as you're listening, as you're reading for yourselves, just put your thoughts in the comments and then we'll go through the comments and invite people to come on. So this notion that a woman is only empowered when she is contributing to society financially is essentially a flawed one, for it does not take into account matters of immaterial value. Families are essential in that they are the means of primary socialization for future generations. They are factories whose product is the development of human personalities, and thus must provide both material and emotional comforts for the healthy development of society's members. The provision of an emotional home is equally as necessary, if not more, than the need for a physical home. Parents, as opposed to institutions of education, recreation, and caretaking, are better suited for providing this sense of security, as they have a personal interest in the child's survival. Thus, it is only absurd to look at women taking up perhaps the most important contribution to society with concern or dread. Now, if power is to be understood as the ability to influence another's behavior or actions, power, right? We're talking about power here. Then women are the most empowered in their role as mothers. Mothers exert the greatest amount of influence on an individual and have the capacity to shape their thoughts and ideas. As such, women hold more power in their roles as mothers than they do in any senior managerial and legislative position. Althusser argued that families are the ideological state apparatus. While for Althusser this is a negative in that children learn norms and values that uphold capitalism, this observation can be used to understand the immensity of the power women wield in their roles as mothers. They quite literally have the capacity to shape the future of their communities. Now, I'm not going to go into all of this because it gets quite heavy. So I'm going to skip forward to this last part where it says, women have played the role of the nurturer for centuries, as it is not only an incredibly important one, but also best suits their sensibilities. This enables them to contribute to society in an atmosphere that is conducive to their femininity and does not force them into environments that run on systems that require masculine traits of aggression and toughness. This then begs a poignant question. Why are femininity and feminine roles seen as inferior to masculine roles so much so that a woman's true value is judged by her capacity to mimic a man? Whew. Okay, well, that was a lot. That was a lot, mashallah. But I hope that we will be able to go back through the comments and have a conversation. So firstly, by and large, let's take a quick poll. If you agree with the sentiment in general of the post that I just read, put agree in the comments or the chat. And if you disagree for whatever reason, put disagree in the chat. Okay, and in the comments. And guys, if you are here live, you know you need to put two live crew in the chat. And if you're watching on the replay, put replay gang in the comments, okay? So let us see what everyone has to say. I want to see, we've got 56 people live. I want to see who agrees and who disagrees, please. Thank you very much. I will be coming back to check. Whew, all right, let's see what we've got. So, yes, Junaid thought homophobia meant something else. And yes, you were wrong. He says, oh, wow, I am flabbergasted. Right. So Bibi says, I feel this is a lot as a new stay-at-home wife. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, sis. Do you feel hard done by? Do you feel that it's too much for you? Do you think it would be easier for you to be working rather than staying at home? I'd love to hear your thoughts, inshallah. So King Sultan says, mashallah, you're doing what pleases Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala the most. So this says thanks. Right. Now, let's see. Right. Let's see. So Haroon says, really appreciate this topic. May Allah help us all. Let's see if I can put the link. There's the StreamYard link, guys, if you want to come in. All right. So Kula says, many women in Pakistan own small personal or family businesses and shops in Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Bangladesh. So it's not really a corporate or industrial economic based country in the first place, he says. So Samir says, I would never work if someone provided for me. I like my sleep and hobbies. Work is a hassle. Nothing fancy about it. And I'm sure there would be people who would agree. And I'm sure there'd be those who disagree. I want to hear that. I want to hear those who agree and those who disagree. King Sultan says, wives that cook and clean full time are better than wives that work. Well, this is your opinion. Let's hear you defend it. I agree with your position. However, if it's okay with the sisters, I think they can work from home. But their primary responsibility is to be a homemaker. Okay, so those brothers who are not married or who would consider getting married, would a sister saying that she wants to work outside the home be a disqualifier? We want to hear. And are you prepared to financially provide everything, everything for that sister? Let us know. King Sultan says, at Adil, why work from home? Why are you all obsessed with working some way or another? Just be a full-time housewife, for God's sake. Okay, sisters, we need to come in here. Is being a full-time housewife doable? Is it acceptable to you? Do you feel that it is a waste of your potential? Would you enjoy that? If somebody agreed to pay for your whole life, would you be cool with being a full-time housewife and literally just making house and not be worried about anything else? Where does this come from? Let's talk. So Fatih says, this is on point, actually. The materialistic side of the world we live in and consumerism, as high as it is now, pushes some to abide by some untold rules to an unknown game, right? And it's interesting because the whole gender pay gap thing is one of those things that they really do push. But we've obviously heard that being refuted and debunked as well, subhanAllah. So Bibi says, capitalism doesn't encourage, nor does it care for this ideology, which is the primary focus of many Western societies, hence the rise in single mothers and singlehood. I'd like to hear what you mean by that, sis. Samir says, stay-at-home moms are better for the kids' upbringing. Kindergarten should be the last resort. Guys, if you disagree with any of these points, please, please let me know in the comments and come into the room. I'll put the link there, inshallah. And guys, I'm waiting for answers to my questions. So Fatih says, we all have roles to play in order for society to function properly. Nina says, unfortunately, I've been judged before by other sisters for choosing to be a stay-at-home mum. It's interesting how the tide has turned. Isn't it interesting? It didn't used to be like that in the Muslim community. So Janae says, the main crux of the problem is we are allowing the Western moral ethos to define what is women's empowerment. 100%. And I know that when I used to use the word empowerment, so empowerment for sisters, a lot of people get very uncomfortable because they would assume that I was talking about this type of empowerment, the language you hear from NGOs and the UN, etc., which is very much about getting women out into the workplace in the same places as men, sort of competing. So interesting. I only say work from home if they desire and the circumstances are favorable. Bibi says, the more single women there are, the more money to be earned and productivity and person in the eyes of the capitalists that rule the world. Well, definitely educated, employed, single women are the gold, right, for the capitalist system. We know that. Especially the older they get and the more sort of luxurious their lifestyle they can afford, the more they'll spend, right? And they don't have dependents, so they don't have to save necessarily. They don't have to keep that money for anybody else, just presents for the nieces and nephews and the godkids, I guess. Right, okay. So most of the people here are agreeing. Khadija says women should stay home until her kids are grown, period. Okay, Aisha says, I agree with the last part. Oh, sis says, whoever put that piece together is spot on. I can't agree more, alhamdulillah. Women's position in the home is the most valuable of her being. Well, I definitely think that she made her point very, very strongly at the end. We're having all sorts of agree. And he says, absolutely, mom should stay home and raise her kids. And then, cough, as a man, I could not get out here in the world and push it to the limit if it was not for my wife and her sacrifice to take care of the home. Absolutely, 100%. I agree. And side note, when I was in high school, there was an STD outbreak and all the kids that obtained the STD, their parents were not at home. Oh my goodness me. Wow. A'udhu billah, may Allah protect our families. May Allah protect our families. Janae says, why talk about power so much? This is the problem of the leftist ideology. They talk about power a lot, but at the same time sanctify the idea of power. Well, the idea of power is that, you know, I think that the way that power is being explained or being contextualized is that basically you have the power to do and to control and to make things happen. And I think as Muslims, our concept of power is not power, it's responsibility, right? And we all have a responsibility. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given us roles to play. Whether we are children, parents, husbands, wives, mothers, fathers, we have roles to play. And I think that the talk about power and privilege is, like you said, it's leftist ideology, I guess, but it's also sort of part of the critical theories and gender theory and racial theory as well, and gender ideology and feminism. Yeah, so I think that's where it is. Khadija says, I think feminist principles instill homophobia in women. Ooh, well, she said it, guys. What do you think? What do you think about that? She says, women used to be in charge of the family's well-being and men for the provision. Today, the focus is on worldly possessions. Subhanallah. That explains the poor health and specifically mental health amongst children. Well, everybody's out there trying to earn to increase their wealth, aren't they? And if a parent can't stay home, then there is nobody who is focusing on those children, subhanAllah. Janae says, if my future wife is working, it's a failure from my end as a husband. Okay, agree. The premise of the study is placing the man's role as the standard because they hold power in the capitalist frame. Yes, we agree. We agree. Right. Being a full-time housewife is not only sensible, but the most fulfilling as she gets to raise the next productive generation, alhamdulillah. Right. King Sultan says, wife working is a big red flag. I will provide fully for her. I don't know what this elbow cough thing is. I'm not really sure. But AM says women should stay at home and focus on their children and the household. Also create a loving and nurturing home with warm meals for her husband. Samir says, it's not a deal breaker if she wants to work, but if I would change my mind later on, I would like her to listen to me, especially if there's no need for two incomes. What if she says, I studied, I got this degree, I want to use it, or I'm bored at home, or I feel like my best skills are not the ones I use at home. I would rather be out there contributing to the ummah. What then is the answer? What would you say? Fatiha says something that somebody in the comments said, and I'm so glad that she said this because that was one of the reasons why I did this live stream, which is, I think being a stay-at-home wife or mom is a luxury nowadays, 100%. I've been both a stay-at-home mother and a working mother, and it all depends on your life situation, for sure. Gadzekpo says, Allah provides. I grew up in a single mother household where she worked. I rarely saw her and was raised by housekeepers and television. Subhanallah. I'm going to let Sister Wad come in, sis, while we're going to go through these comments together. Assalamu alaikum. Wow. You're in.
Assalam. Hi, it's good to be here again.
Alaykum to have you back again.
I am well, alhamdulillah.
Let's go through these comments. So,
you can hear me well?
Yes, we can hear you well, mashallah. So, Amina says, and this is the first person who's kind of given some pushback. So, Amina says, I personally don't think women that work are being materialistic. I'm a teacher and believe the society needs me as much as my family. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I don't judge individuals. I judge a system. The system today, I mean, there's a lot of women who want to be housewives. They can't. They have to go out there. They have to provide for their families. That's because of the way the system is shaped, right? For me personally, I'm not against women working. Like a lot of people think that I am. I'm not. Inherently, a woman working is not wrong. When it comes and it interferes with her role as a mother and as a wife, that's when it becomes a problem. And I think the system, which feminism largely contributed to, that's one of the things that it did, was to forcefully push women into the workforce and at the expense of the family, of her duties as a mother and as a wife. If you as an individual go out there and do your thing as a woman, go and you work and you do all of that, you know, that's good. But when we look at society as a whole, you know, that's good for you, right? But when we look at a society as a whole, when all women are out there and nobody's at home, who's there at home taking care of the children? When we look at it from a collective level, right, there is a price to pay, you know? Yeah. I mean, there's some women who can balance being at work and being at home. That's good for you. Not a lot of women can do that. We have to, you see, the problem is with society today is a lot to do with individualism. Everybody's thinking about, well, if it worked for me, it's like this. And if it's for me, it's like this. Nobody's really looking at what does this do for society as a whole. Nobody's really caring about how society as a whole is affected by certain things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. And It's interesting because I think anybody who has tried to juggle or balance between being a wife and a mum and working can attest to the fact that it's tough. I mean, there's some people who do it, some people who need to do it. We need some people to do it, right? But I think the question here is, how much do we make that the standard? How much do we make that the norm, right? That every woman is working, you know, and even if she has kids, she's still expected to be working out in the workforce. I think that's a big deal. Aisha says, full-time housewife, been there, done that. Nothing wrong with that if your husband can take care of everything else. Rahana says, acceptable, but if you can work a halal work like a teacher for women, why not make it easy for the husband? I mean, 3 hours a day working and earning 20 euros an hour would help society, not only the family. That's interesting, actually, because, you know, some people have mentioned that, you know, they wouldn't have a problem with their wife working as long as it doesn't interfere. You know, and if you're contributing to the household, I know there will be some men who will be like, yes, please do that. And then others will be like, no, thank you. I've got this. So Let me poke the bear a little bit here. So this is something I would like sisters to consider, right? So let's make it a bit fancy. Say your husband is working and he, you know, you guys already agreed, or he would rather that you stay at home with the kids and look after the house, look after the kids, look after him, etc., right? And he's working and he's providing, but he's only providing to a certain level. And you want more. And you know that if you go out to work, there's going to be two incomes in the house and you guys will be able to have more, to do more. Maybe you'll be able to afford that holiday. Maybe you'll be able to afford to buy better clothes or shop at better shops, etc., right? How much of that wanting more influences us as sisters to want to go out and earn for ourselves? Either wanting more for the family or wanting more for ourselves in our own pockets. Sister Wad, I want to see if you have any insight on this. And also for those of you in the chat, let me know what you think, because from where I'm standing, this is something that comes up, that it's not like, oh, we're starving if I don't work, but it's like, I want more and my husband can't bring more. He can't do more, but I want us to have more. So I'm going to go and go out there and work. What are your thoughts first, Sister Wad?
You know what's so interesting is the reason why this is a problem today, because it wasn't so much a problem long ago. The reason why it's such a problem today is because, especially in the West, okay, so that's not a problem at all. Okay, not at all. Okay, so I live in the Khadij, the GCC countries. Most people here live on one income, right? Mm. And it's more than enough. It includes even the luxuries and all of that. But what I've seen in the West, the Western economic system is shaped in such a way where it's really, really hard to live off of one income, right? And so in cases as that, like I've said before, inherently, it's not wrong for a woman to work as long as that does not interfere with your role as a mother and as a wife, particularly as a mother. And the reason why I say this is because if you go out and work, even if you have to, in order, because it's a need, you have to in order to take care of your family, or if it's just, you know, for extra luxury, right? Or to get above the bare minimum. There will always be a price to pay if you're going to be spending more time in the workforce than you are at home, particularly as a mother with your children, and particularly if your children are young, because your input as a mother in, you know, the tarbiyah and raising your children is much more important, I'd say, than even just the extra luxuries. So I would say, and I've actually thought of something where it's like today society kind of pushes us to go after a career and to go and work and to go and have all the fun during our prime years, right? And I just think to myself, I know of women who they are now in their late 40s, early 50s, maybe going to the 60s, and their children are already grown, right? Teenagers now. And they have the time now to go and actually make something, right, for themselves, a career or something like that. And on the side, they have the love and support of their family. So for me, I just think to myself, now just generally, because we are being pushed, whether we like it or not, even if from a cultural perspective, we are being pushed to go after a career. But for us as women, right, we have a specific amount of time that we can actually make a family.
Yeah.
That's just how it is, right?
Yeah.
That's the biological fact. Why don't we, during these years, focus on making a family, bearing a family, and then after that, in the end, when our children are all grown, and they don't even have to be like fully grown, like teenagers, right? You have more time for yourself now to do those type of things. But for me, I always stress that the first 7 years, in fact, the first 14 years, it is incredibly important for the mother to be invested in the child's life. Mm-hmm. Because if you're not giving your child, there's actually a term by John Bowlby. He calls it maternal deprivation, right? Mm-hmm. Which is basically how a child is affected, mm-hmm. how his cognitive development, physical mm-hmm. development, personality is affected by the lack of maternal deprivation. And what I've noticed is that there is a bond of trust that is created between the mother and the child, or even the mother and the parent, the child and the parents, but particularly the mother and the child, because the mother spends more time with the child. The mother is more nurturing with the child. This bond, right, if it's not created with the mother, particularly in the first 7 years, it will be created with whoever else you leave in the care of your child, you leave your child in the care of. So if it's the school system, if it's a nanny, if it's a caretaker, whoever it is, that is not you, that child will create this bond. It's kind of like a survival mode. It has to create a bond with someone. And whoever it is that is spending time with this child, it's going to create the bond. And people can say, okay, well, that's okay. That's great. It's not great. I'll tell you why. First of all, this is your child. Right? This is your child who should grow up to trust you. And particularly in the West, where there's a lot of, daycare centers, and you, as soon as possible, you're getting your child into the education system, right? Mm. Now, your child, from it's very young, is creating this bond of trust with the education system. And we know, particularly in the West, the education system is indoctrinating these children with a lot of bad things, and it's getting worse and worse and worse. And so now your child has created this bond of trust with the education system, because you've thrown the child in the education system when you were so young, right? And when this child begins to question, right, and it begins to ask questions, particularly in terms of the deen, and it begins to question God, and it begins to question certain things that Islam prohibits and doesn't prohibit. Or, for example, it comes to you and it questions our existence. Where do we come from? Evolution, things like that. And you say, no, we are created by Allah. And the child's going to say, that's not what we taught at school. And you're going to say, how can you believe the school? I'm telling you this, I'm your parent. But the child is going to, without question, see, the child could believe you without question if it created the bond of trust with you. Mm-hmm. But it's going to believe the education system without question over you because it created the bond of trust with the education system and not you. And if it gets, and it's not only with the education system, right? If it's a nanny, if it's a caretaker, whoever you, when you leave your child in the care of someone else and you lose on the opportunity of creating this bond of trust, then your child is going to trust anybody and believe everybody over you. And this is why I stress so much on the fact that even if you have to, I know, I understand that sometimes you don't have a choice. You have to go out there, you have to food on the table, but there's always going to be a price to pay. And that's why even for mothers who have to work, always spend, like, you gotta really hustle to spend time with your children. And for those mothers, and there's so many different jobs that women can do, remote work and things like that, if you want to go just beyond the bare minimum that your husband is providing for you, right? This is going to the initial topic that we were on.
Yeah.
Do something that will, without a shadow of a doubt, not sacrifice your relationship with your children. It will not sacrifice your motherhood, and it will not sacrifice your wifehood.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think it's interesting, actually, because one of the things that I've noticed when I, because I have this terrible habit of watching these terrible shows where women call up and they say the kind of man that they're looking for, and lots of single moms on there. And it's interesting to me that, you know, these single moms will talk so much about how they're studying, they're working, they're, you know, they're doing this, they're doing that. They're like, you know, to show I'm handling it, right? But I see this question coming up again and again, which is like, okay, while you're studying and working and running your business on the side and your side hustle, who is raising these kids, right? Who is raising your children, right? Because that's not a part-time job unless you're outsourcing it, right? And if you're outsourcing motherhood, then what you're saying is that there is a price to be paid, right? There's a price to be paid when we outsource motherhood, and we know that. And guys, one of the things that you should know is if you read any dystopic literature, any dystopian fiction that you can think of, 1984, Brave New World, any one of them, what do they do with the children? The first thing they do is they destroy the bond between a parent and a child, right? This is what you were saying. They create an alternative. They outsource the parenting to something that is state-sponsored, so that the child can be fully indoctrinated in whatever the state wants them to believe, right? And that's something that, you know, we should all bear in mind, especially for most of us not living in a place where, you know, our iman is supported. You don't want to be in that situation. So Basma says, I was raised by a stay-at-home mom, but sisters, don't we need Muslim sisters in teaching and health professions? Sis, you know that we need sisters to be working, right, in certain areas. Certain, some of them are daruri, like necessary, and some of them is just halal. The question here, I think, is more a case of we're not going to go to the other extreme and say no sisters should ever be educated or work. No one's saying that. What we're doing right now is we're trying to bring it back to a balanced position, because the pendulum has swung the complete opposite way. So the pendulum has swung to sisters should be all in university, sisters all should be getting master's, they should all be working. And I know, sis, that I'm sure you're aware that there are many sisters who complain that families, especially families, not so much men, but families in certain communities, if you don't have a degree and you're not working and bringing income, they're not interested. It's like, no, that's, you know, we want a girl who's going to bring something to the table.
It's kind of become like a standard. Like, yeah. It's like she has to be like this. She has to know how to cook. She knows how to clean. And then she has a degree. It's like, yeah, in the list of marriage, what is it called? What you would look for in marriage. And one of them, yeah, is like a degree. And I've actually seen this quite a lot. But I wanted to mention one, yeah, thing the sister mentioned. For these women in health and teaching and things like that, like I said before, why don't the women who have already had children and they have time now, we can use those women in society. They can now come out in the society, right, and actually, you know, put their energy out in the society. We, yeah, are mainly speaking about the mothers who are still young. They have young children. They need to take care. Somebody needs to take care of the children. I mean, you can't be taking care of the society and not taking care of your children. Yeah. How does that work? And also, there was also a point that somebody made earlier, how the workplace was not designed for women. That's actually a very, very good point, because from a physiological perspective, the workplace was made to fit the male 24-hour testosterone cycle. For us women, we run on a 28-day cycle. Hormonal. We run on a 28-day hormonal cycle, which includes our menstrual cycle, which is basically our menstrual cycle. The men have a similar hormonal cycle, except it is daily. And it is the same, right?
Who knew that?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I was so shocked. They have, it's the same every day, right? In the morning, the testosterone levels fluctuates,
right?
And then it gradually declines during the day. For us as women, every week we have different fluctuations. I mean, what? We have like 5 hormones specifically to do with reproduction, right? And those are fluctuating throughout the month. And so some weeks we are active, other days we are not so active. Our hormonal system, our physiology, and these hormones that we produce, right, the same for men. It affects the way our stress management, our productivity. And so it's different for men than it is for women. And so the workplace was essentially, excuse me, the workplace was essentially created to suit, it was designed for this male testosterone cycle thing, right? And so when we're bringing women in now, nobody really took the time to kind of make it suitable for the woman's physiology. And that's why so many women go into the workforce and they're just so exhausted. So much reproductive issues, so much mental issues, so much problems that women are experiencing, and they can't really, you know, talk about it. I mean, menstrual pain and things like that.
Women are going. Anybody got time for that? Nobody wants to hear that. No.
You know what they're doing? They're just taking painkillers and birth control. Yeah. And that's not actually solving the problem, right? I've actually been on a journey now of painless periods, which is, I didn't know it was a thing, right? And so what I found is that the society, the environment affects us. And to such an extent that today it's a pandemic. Every woman, you know, has complained about it, right? But instead of actually going to the root of the problem, to solving it, we're just, they're just giving us birth controls
more and more Tylenol.
And all these, we're just numbing it down. Yeah. And that, for women in the workforce particularly, and I've heard of women who left the workforce and they felt much more peace because they're not in the workforce, first of all, aside from it being created for the, against our physiology, it's also made against our energy as women, our feminine energy, our nature, because you have to go out into the workforce and now it's a fight, it's a hustle. You got to be fighting, you got to be competing. That you need masculinity for that. And whether you like it or not, you're going to go into the workforce and you're going to have to embody that masculinity.
We've got the boss babes, we've got the boss chicks. And you know what? I want to go to this Khadija worked, and I want to bring in two other guests because this is huge, right? This is time for us to get busy. But I want to thank for the 1999 super chat. Jazakallah khairan, guys. Keep those super chats coming. We love them. Bismillah. It's Fadalo. You can do PayPal. You can do buy me a coffee. Actually, last live stream, mashallah, tabarakallah, you guys bought me so many coffees. I was so, so grateful. Jazakallah khairan to all of you and all the super chats as well. So I'm going to bring in our two here. And I'm going to bring this up for us to discuss. But I want to say that for me, one of the things I found to be so crazy when I look at any clips from reality TV nowadays is how many women will, when they are defending themselves or when they want to make a point, will say, I'm a boss bee. I'm an effing boss bee, you know? And it's this energy of like, don't F with me. I'm an effing boss bee. And I'm like, sis, and this could be in a relationship. That was somebody could say to their partner, you know, basically, I'm the boss bee around here, you know. And I'm like, this is so strange to me for women to be speaking in this way and to be presenting themselves in this way. But hey, what do I know? That's the girl boss energy, right? That's the girl boss energy. That's the masculinas out there. So let's talk about this. Whenever the conversation turns to Muslim women and working, there is a segment of the population that says Khadija radiallahu anha was a businesswoman. She was a wealthy businesswoman. She was a boss bae, okay? And she provided this and this and this. So who are you to regress and make this deen regressive and say that women, Muslim women, shouldn't be working? I don't want to say anything on this. I want to invite our new panelists to come in and chime in on the issue of Khadija radiallahu anha being a boss babe, with all due respect. Who would like to go first? Brother Ismail or Muhammad?
Okay. As you please.
You unmuted first. I think we have to give it to you, inshallah.
Okay. The thing that sisters, first of all, assalamu alaikum. The thing that sisters conveniently forget about Khadija radiallahu anha. First of all, she's amongst the four best women in the Ummah. She's amongst the four best women in paradise. She ran her business from a distance. She never was on the markets with men. dealing with business. She always had people working for her, amongst them the Prophet Muhammad alayhi salatu salam. And that's how they got to know each other, because he was working for her. And when she became his wife, he became the authority. And she had his children, and she raised the children in the home. And she was sent the good news of a place in Jannah where there is no noise, complete silence. You know why? Because when the Prophet Muhammad ﷺ came to the home, he found peace and silence. If you tell them, when you tell me, she had her own business. Okay, it's okay. Nowadays we got internet. You can't have your own business. But are you willing to provide me with the same things that she provided me? If you are going to invoke her name, and when I say invoke, I mean like use her name as an argument. And most of them are not, because they're just using it to get their ways. The issue is more of a macro issue. And when I say macro, what I mean is it's the bigger picture. Nowadays, we have found the limits of life in the West. Life in the West is not sustainable anymore. I have brothers who made hijrah to Morocco. And in Morocco, they are living on a, you know, 700, 800 euro salary. The wife is not working. They're the only ones working. And they're living a very decent life. Allahumma barak. And so the model of society over there is different, even though it's becoming westernized. They're not living the 9-to-5 life. They have time to go to the masjid. They work more in the mornings than they work in the afternoons. The cycles are different, like Sister Ward was talking about the cycles. The cycles are different. And we have to adapt our lifestyle to our deen. And what we're doing right now is we adapting our deen and the things we should be doing for ourselves and our families to the Western lifestyle, which has found its limits. So nowadays, everybody got to work. Two incomes are not even enough anymore. In the West, you know, women got to work even if they don't want to, because one income is not sufficient. The cost of living is just so high. Everything is pushed towards individualism. Everything is pushed towards zina, mixing, premixing, men and women dealing with each other, women becoming more masculine, men becoming more feminine. It's just not sustainable for us as Muslims. If we come back to the community, if we come back to Islam, if we come back to the way of life that we're supposed to have, there's going to be a community of, even if a woman is a doctor, she's a gynecologist, she's whatever, right? There's going to be aunties, there's going to be the grandma, there's going to be the neighbors who are going to be raising this little girl or this little boy. And then this little boy is going to be with the uncles, he's going to be with the men. We need the community, not just the family. And to get the community, we need to all gather around the society that has a society model that is more sustainable for us, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you know, it absolutely makes sense. And just one thing I want to mention as well on this point. I mean, the comments are amazing here, guys. So, mashallah, keep them coming. That in a situation where everybody is pushed to work and everybody either wants to work or is compelled to work, even the situation that you described becomes unsustainable, because who are these aunties that are at home? Who are these grandmothers at home even? I'm thinking in terms of in the next generation, unless we pull the brakes on now, in the next generation, there will be no aunties at home. There will be no, you know, grannies at home. Because if you think about it, if you look at the workings, the span, okay, where, and the thing is, what I'm seeing is a lot, and again, I don't know where this comes from. I'm not saying this as a criticism. I'm just saying this as something that we've seen, is that women feeling, I have to rely on myself. I have to have something for myself in case he divorces me, my husband dies, you know, I'm left on my own. I have to have something for myself, right? And women also feeling that it is normal and correct for them to provide for themselves and actually prefer to provide for themselves than to rely on a man to provide for them, right? So what that does is we've basically signed up to look after ourselves for the rest of our lives, right? Until we reach 65 or whatever the case may be. And that has a huge impact on the choices we make, what we say yes to, what we say no to, who we say yes to, who we say no to, what we agree, what we, you know, don't agree to. And this is something that I'd like us to talk about and be aware of, because it seems to make sense. Why would I rely on anybody else? I should rather make sure that I'm okay and that I can rely on myself and I won't be a burden on anyone else. But the point is that a society is made up of interdependent beings, right? A community is made up of interdependent beings. If we don't rely on each other, we don't have a community. Now we've just got individuals out here living their best lives, doing whatever they want to do. Oh, Muhammad, please jump in, sis. Sorry, you've been waiting so long, so patiently. What are your thoughts? What would you like to contribute?
Hello, assalamu alaikum. Can you hear me?
Wa alaikum salam. Yes, we can hear you.
Hi, I just want to, you know, talk about most of the time it's actually family members who kind of, you know, make the sisters feel bad for staying home.
Yeah.
They say, for example, like, you know, I had that situation with my mother and she was like, what are you doing home? Mm-hmm. Put the child in nursery. You know, you can't always depend on your husband, you know, so on and so forth.
Interesting.
Even though I was very content, you know, being a stay-at-home mom, this is what I wanted to do, my child in nursery.
Yeah. Mad. Isn't that mad? Do you guys find that to be the case across the board? Do you think families are also part of this issue? What do you think?
Yeah, if I may jump in for a second, because she cut out. I think the reason, everything that you mentioned was absolutely true, 100%. But I think we have to focus on the reason. Most women think, I mean, they grow up thinking that they have to rely on themselves because they were indoctrinated into that. And the sad part is that some of them are born into Muslim families and you got Muslim fathers. This is what bugs me out the most. Fathers telling their daughters, baby, work in school, get your degrees, as many of them as you can, so that you will never depend on the man. The father is saying that.
Wow.
And then they have examples going up. You think women need 100 examples to have confirmation bias? Nah. Mm-hmm. 3 or 5, 7 at the most. And they will. You will get, if you're looking for 5 examples of men being unreliable and irresponsible and leaving their children behind, or, you know, putting their wives in a bad situation, you will find those 5 examples in your life. I can find in my life, you can find in your life. And just the neighbor, the stories that you've heard, the second, third, fourth hand experience, you will hear about this. So you will get confirmation bias. So you're like, oh, nowadays there's no men. Oh, nowadays you can count on the men. Nowadays, it's risky to count on a man. Oh, I know plenty of sisters. She knows 3. I know plenty of sisters who got left and they got divorced and they had nothing to show for, and they didn't have degrees so they couldn't work. And and so is the fear mongering growing up. That's like 20, 25 years of indoctrination of you cannot count on men. And now we have to, as men, acting like real men, taking care of our families, we have to prove that to a woman. And she's always watching. As men, we're just men. We are going to mess up. We are going to make mistakes. We are going to fumble. We are going to have our own trials, our own tests from Allah. If I lose my job tomorrow, are you going to be the one that's supporting me and telling me, don't worry about it, I'll stay with you no matter what? Just go out there and look for our risk, and we're going to pray together, and we're going to wake up before Fajr, and we're going to make dua. Or you're going to be the one looking at me like, hey, did you go to this Tempork agency to look for work? Did you call this guy? And are you going to act like that and be behind my back until I find work and then say, oh, I knew it. I couldn't count on you. Because I knew brothers to whom it happened. And they ended up getting divorced years after
that. You know, brother, as you say, you know, I'm sure as you know brothers who that's happened to, I definitely know of sisters who were married to men who they just, for whatever reason, emotional, mental, family issues, whatever, they just could not get it together. And they were happy to stay in the government-sponsored house, living off their wife's paycheck. And it just was the situation. Like, that's what it was. And we've talked about this on previous live streams before, just how that messes up the dynamic within the family. If you don't have any leverage as a man, we've got issues, mate, right? Because you as a man, you're going to want things done a certain way in your house. But if it's not your house, in the sense that you didn't pay for it, you're not actively working to keep it together and providing, you're at a disadvantage. And in the society we live in today, that could mean that your wife looks at you one day and says, you know what? What exactly are you bringing to the table? Oh, my goodness. Sister Wad, what are your thoughts? I just want to jump on this comment here. Just to clarify, guys, where I think this is a brother who says, I'm not sure what this picture is about, but only wealthy women could afford not to work in history. Feminism began with the technological advancement because women got bored. And we want to just clarify at this point, when we say women working, we should probably be more careful with our language. What we mean is women working in the workforce, okay, for a salary. Not working, because we know that whether you stay at home or you go out, you're working. Of course, back in the day, your work was more physical. I would say nowadays, the work is more intellectual, is more mental. So, for example, you know, the families that decide to homeschool, for example, that's usually the mother who takes that on board. That's work, right? Because not only is she managing the household, which still is a lot of work, even though, alhamdulillah, we have appliances and so many other things that make it easy, it still is a lot of work to manage a home and to manage it well, right? Then you add homeschooling or Quran and Hifth and doing things with the kids and keeping them busy and, you know, keeping them focused and, you know, all the rest of it. It still is work. So we're not saying stay at home, do nothing, or go out and work. That's not the juxtaposition. All right. So Sister Wad, did you want to jump in on what we were saying before?
Yeah, I wanted to speak about the reason why we are in such a predicament of, on one hand, women being told that they have to, you know, fend for themselves. Mm. And on the other hand, you have men who are unable to go about with their responsibilities as protectors and maintainers, as Qawwamun. It's such a deep topic. But on one hand, we have mass emasculation of men, right? From the deindustrialization, right, I've mentioned this in the last live stream, where basically men or young boys going into school, by the time they were 18 and they were graduating school, they already had skills that they could make a living off, right? Today it's kind of like they're pushed right into their 20s, and it's like they're during the years where they are really most active and innovative and all of that, they're unable to really make a living because they're in school, right? And school has been stretched out, but also from a ideological perspective, where there's been a lot of programming in emasculating men, where masculinity in itself is looked as toxic, right? And then you have, on the other hand, just generally individualism, which is kind of plaguing, where everybody first thinks of themselves. And what you mentioned on the, in terms of, you know, community, how community is based on interdependence, this is so integral. And this is something that we have technically put aside as society. Today, we don't really care. And this is like, it goes back to what I was saying earlier. We look at things from, we're always looking at an individualistic perspective, how this affects this person and how this affects that person. We don't really look at it from a societal level, how it affects the overall well-being of the society. And so now what has happened is you have men who have been emasculated, and they're unable to go about with their roles as protectors. They're unable to protect their woman. They're unable to provide for their woman. And then women who are being told, well, you have to do it for yourself, right? So instead of actually solving the root of the problem, right? We are now
assigning. It's an exacerbation.
Yeah, exactly. And so now what's happening is you have women who are, they don't want to rely on anyone, right? And men who, when they don't have anybody to protect and to provide, that in of itself, it emasculates them even more, that they don't feel the need, you know? Because what feminism,
yeah, you know, can I just
what feminism
jump in?
Did was...
Sorry, go on.
No, go ahead.
No, I just want to say that what you're describing is basically the nihilism, right, of a society in which men/young men have no stake in society, right? They have no role. And this is, I think this is the conversation happening in certain men's spaces, people like Jordan Peterson, etc., just talking about this, the aimlessness of young men today being tied to the fact that they have been told again and again, you are expendable, you're not necessary, nobody needs you around here, and we don't really want you around here unless you can behave in this way and this way and that way, right? And so it's like a double whammy, isn't it? Women are told, be independent, be strong, be powerful, be a boss babe, you know, secure the bag, and men are then robbed of what would have been a primary driver for them. I just want to ask Brother Ismail to come in on this one. Is it true, in your opinion and in your experience, that one of the things that drives men to achieve and to push and to do more is the idea of building with a woman, or because they have dependence, or is that just urban myth?
Okay. It's interesting because we talked about this with brothers. It's two things, right? When you're married and you don't have kids, if you have a supporting wife, but in the real sense, like a real supporting wife, a wife that, like I told you in the previous example, that is going to stay next to you and say, listen, Allah is the provider. You go out there, you do everything that's necessary, and we're going to make dua. And a woman like that, a brother will wake up at 2 a.m. looking for work. And I know that for a fact. When a woman is fully in her feminine role as a wife, then yeah, we're gonna go out there and fight anything that comes our way, anything, really anything. And when we have kids that depend on us, it's like brothers who have kids tell me about this feeling that it's something you can never describe. Of now I have to protect and provide. It's just now it's not about me. I don't exist anymore, you know? And this is true also. But what men yearn for is it's like your phone, right? When it's the night time, you're gonna charge your phone. When you wake up in the morning, the phone is fully charged, and you go and use it during the day. Mm-hmm. And then you charge it again. And that's us men, when we go out, we are fully charged. Then we come home with almost no battery. Mm. And we recharge at the home. So if we have a home that depends on us, but that also is helping us recharge, it is those two components, then yes, that's the way it works. It's like, it's not about me anymore. I don't care what happens to me. I don't care if I have problems at work. I don't care if I have mental problems. I don't care if I have physical problems. Mm. I don't care if my back hurts. I don't care about none of that. I got to take care of my family.
And we need that. Let's be fair. We need that sentiment. Don't we, Wad? We love it. We love to see it. And we need that.
Yeah.
We need that.
Absolutely. It's absolutely so refreshing to hear this.
MashaAllah, tabarakallah. Okay, so there's two things here. We need that. So Wad and I are agreed that we need men to feel that way about their families, right? That's what we want to see. That's what we need. Sister Anjali says, though, what is wrong with a woman being independent? Wad, do you want to just jump to that on that question? And then we want to talk about this question. Do men feel intimidated by career-focused women? Love the word intimidated. Thank you, Brother Samir. So sis, is there anything wrong with a woman being independent? What's the big deal here?
Independent in what sense? Independent in the workforce? You know, not a lot of women. Not a lot of women benefit from it, right? A lot of women go into the workforce and they realize this is not for us. And because of the economic system and the way the system has been shaped, particularly after a lot of women flock towards the workforce, is now you can't really get out. You're in and you're practically staying in. A lot of women just have to cope. Lots of women. There are some women who, yeah, they have a little bit of, some extra masculine energy. They can really cope with it and everything. That's not a lot of women who are like that. And I've dealt with networks of sisters, right? I have a lot of sisters who contact me, tell me. And what I hear from them is that, especially in the West, like I said, we don't really have that type of problem here in the East. We don't have, it's not a serious, serious problem like it is in the West. In the West, the economic system is terrific. But anyway, a lot of sisters who tell me that they're not happy. You're independent, but you're not happy. Because in the end, our nature, our fitra is to be protected and to feel taken care of. Yeah. It is not in our fitra, it is not in our nature to provide and to take that responsibility of going out into the world, into the harsh, harsh world that is affecting our fitra, our femininity, right? You're going to burn out, essentially, and you're not going to do it as good as men are going to do it. And that's the whole point, is women can do what men can do. They can never do it as good as men. And I was just saying earlier on today on Twitter, we're having this discussion, and I was like, yeah, okay, women can go out and do everything a man can do. It does not make them great women. Because you cannot be great doing something that you're not. You can be a great man wannabe, trying to be like a man and trying to compete with the men in the workforce, but you won't be a great woman because you cannot be great in doing something that you're not.
Fair enough.
A contradictory statement.
Fair enough. All right, let's get to the juicy stuff. Do men feel intimidated by career-focused women? Brother Ismail, you're the man in the room. We're going to give it to you first, inshallah, and then I want to hear what you have to say, Sister Wad. And also, guys, in the chat right now, do men feel intimidated by career-focused women? Give me your answer in the chat. I will be highlighting the most interesting ones. Go ahead, Brother Ismail.
The short answer is no. The problem we have as men is, I think for women to understand it, I need to flip it. So Okay. Are you intimidated by a man that has quote-unquote male beauty products in the home? Are you intimidated by a man that takes care of his physical appearance a lot? Are you intimidated by a man who likes to cook? Are you intimidated by a man that is better at cleaning the house than you?
Oh no, you hit a nerve there, brother. No, these are fighting words. This is waking up and choosing violence. What do you mean? We were with you for a minute there and then things got a bit hectic. So what do you mean by that? Come on, what's your point?
You see what I did there? I hit a nerve, right?
Yeah.
But why?
Because I'm supposed to be the queen of that.
Okay. Then this is how men feel.
Ooh.
It's like if you're trying to say, I can work for myself, I can provide for myself. Well, I can cook, I can clean. I might do it better than you. This feeling that you have when I say it is the feeling that we have when you talk about it. And there are many things, subhanAllah. We are opposite and similar at the same time. I was telling a brother, that there was my cousin wanted me to look at a sister. And the sister, I was not attracted to her. And I feel guilty because from what I know, she's a good person. She's a very good person and she's sincere towards Allah and all that. And I felt guilty. I was like, man, you know, just for that detail. But now I was like, it's not a detail. If a woman isn't around the house, getting ready for you and you're ignoring her, it's like you, she's telling you to open up a jar and your hands are greasy. You want to open it, you can't, so you grab a towel. By the time you grab the towel, she's opened it and she's laughing at you. I tell brothers that. I said, you know, the feeling that you have right there is the feeling that she has when she's getting ready for you and she's getting ignored. And so we have those things where we need to flip it. We are not intimidated by women who make money, who are quote unquote independent, even if that doesn't mean anything, because you're dependent on your boss. And if you're an entrepreneur, you're dependent on your clients. So you're dependent on somebody, right? Only animals like sharks and snakes are independent. And the only thing they do is they go grab food on their own and come back. They don't build anything. And the thing I need us to understand as Muslims is that we need each other. I talk to brothers all the time. I'm 30. I have a brother, he's 34. He's getting married. He actually got married this month.
Mashallah, mabruk.
He told me, bro, go get married. Get married, because we, as men, we are nothing without women. It's not something that I'm going to go out and say just out in public like that, because pride, you know. But he's right. He's right. We are nothing without women. Because, and women are nothing without us. You know why? Because we build families together. Mm. And so what is the point of saying I'm independent, even though you're not, and saying I'm intimidating you, which are words that have been programmed into your head? Because you don't really know what that means.
What is
the point of saying that when the goal is to build?
This is the point that is being made, mashallah, in the comments, which is that it's not about being intimidated. So this JB says they're intimidated because they are more masculine and competitive, but not from a place of envy, from a place of not wanting to compete with their wife or deal with that masculine energy. And I think that that's the what do you think of that? Do you agree with that?
Yeah, that's absolutely accurate.
Yeah. Sister Wad, what say to you?
You know, the whole independence thing, and I love the fact that it was mentioned that we are always dependent. So it's a fallacy. You cannot be independent. As human beings, you cannot be independent. You cannot live all by yourself all along. And that's the thing that's being pushed, is if you're out in the workforce, right, it's like you being in your home, serving your husband and your children is enslavement. But you go out, and you serve your boss and strangers. That's empowerment. How does that work? Yeah. How does that make sense? You're going to be serving people anyway, in one way or another. There's no such thing as being independent and all on your own and the boss and all of that. No, you're going to be independent one way or another. And, you know, for example, sisters be like, oh, no, I have to work because if I stay at home, you know, you're being provided by a husband, right? If I stay at home, what if one day he dies or we get a divorce or anything?
Yeah.
I say the same question. What if one day your boss fires you? What's going to happen then? He's just going to fire you just like that. You're going to also have to go and find some other way to make a living. It's the same. You see, the point is we have this idea that that's the solution. Go out into the workforce. Go be a boss, babe. That is the solution. It's not the solution. It's that you're going to find yourself in the same problems. Is the way you deal with the problems. What is the solution that you're going to find to these problems? Independence doesn't exist. I put that on the table. Because many sisters be thinking it does, but it doesn't.
Agreed. And I think that the focus here is, you know, how can we be interdependent in a more productive way, in a healthier way, right? Because at some point or another, none of us is an island, right? Every one of us is going to need somebody or some, you know, like, it's just crazy. It's crazy. This individualist push is just crazy to me. Eve says, why do women get so bitter and rude when they focus on their careers and education? That's impossible to put up with and live with. No serenity. May I offer an answer here? I think it has to do with the masculine programming that we have through the education system. coming up through primary, secondary school, and then up into university and in the workforce, you are bred into your most competitive self, your most masculine self, right? And as I've said before on this platform, you know, for those of us who have invested blood, sweat, and tears into our education, girls work hard at school. Like, girls work very hard at school and they want to do well. So those girls who got top GCSEs, who got top A levels, they are very proud of that. Okay. It's a huge part of their sense of self-worth and achievement and accomplishment, right? When they go into university, if they get into their top choice university, again, I worked hard for this. This is a huge part of who I am and you know, my worth as a person. If they do well in their degree, if they get a good job, all of these we are taught are a part of who we are, okay? It becomes your identity. Now, the problem is you've been bred to see yourself as this student, as this, you know, star student, star pupil, you know, top achiever, whatever, all of the things, right, that you were competing for in your masculine, but not realizing it. And then you come into a relationship with a man or in a meeting or a sit down or something like that. Which self do you think you are going to put forward? Of course, the one you're proudest of. If you talk about who you are, you're going to put your achievements out there because that's a huge part of now who you are. This is who you have become, right? You get to 23, 24, 25, 27. You've been through, you know, the degree program. You've had the master's, or you've made a certain amount of money, or you've bought your own house, or you've bought your own car. The society teaches you that these are the milestones. These are the achievements. These are the things that make you better than other people, that make you stand out, right? You've achieved your potential. So it's very confronting, I'm sure, when women come into a situation where there's a man who's looking for a wife and she brings all these accomplishments to the table. And the man looks at that and says, okay, yeah, that's cool. But like, what do you have to offer me as a wife? And then she's like, he doesn't see me. He doesn't appreciate me. He's a misogynist. Oh, he's a chauvinist. He's a sexist. You know, he doesn't value who I am. He doesn't like me for my mind. And it's just like a moment where she realizes that, okay, this is who I've seen myself as. This is who I've been taught to see myself as. But I don't cut it when it comes to being a wife, because some people have mentioned on this platform before, and I haven't heard anybody combat this, is that in that fight that you fought to get the degrees, to get the money, to achieve all these amazing things, you develop certain personality traits, right? You develop certain personality traits like stick with itness, like determination, like, you know, hard headedness, you know, being disagreeable, negotiating, arguing. Basically, you're in your competitive masculine, right? And if a man sees that, for most of the men that we talk to anyway, when they're being honest, that's not what they're looking for in a wife. They don't want a wife to argue with. They don't want a wife to butt heads with. They don't want a wife to go toe to toe with them. They don't want a wife to, and it is so funny because we've been programmed to want a man who doesn't exist. Bruv, this is crazy to me, right? Because when you hear most women, when they're talking and you ask them about their ideal guy, he's a man who doesn't exist. He's this man who is basically your biggest fan. And what he loves about you is what you love about yourself. Does that make sense, Sister Y? Do you know what I mean when I say that? What you want this guy who just, he just loves you the way about yourself, everything you love so much about yourself, that's what he loves too. And he wants everything you have, and he doesn't want anything that you don't have, right? He doesn't want any qualities or anything that you don't already possess. That's your dream guy. That's your ideal mate. That's your soulmate. And unfortunately, what the feedback we're getting from the men in general and from the others is that, nah, bro, that's not what I'm looking for. Like, that guy you're talking about does not exist. What do you think of that?
A first class degree does not make you a first class wife. That's what a lot of women don't understand. You can be good in the outside world. How is that degree going to help you at home? How is that degree going to help you as a wife? It could help you, I can understand, it could help you as a mother, but as a wife in your relationship with your husband, last time I checked, we were not learning about gender dynamics and relationships, and we were not being mentored at school. That's not what we have certificates on,
yeah,
right? Nothing to do with relationships. And so you get into a relationship and you think that your degrees is going to help you, is not going to make you your first class wife. Nope.
Brother Ismail, what say to you to this?
First of all, I want to say Loma Bedek, that was bars. And second thing I want to say is, it actually happened to me twice. So it's going to make me look really bad. But back when I was indulging in talking with women, it's not like I was talking with thousands of women, but there were two who really wanted to marry me. But that's the problem. I became like the more I let them be who they are, the more I was faced with a choice. There was a really it was a tough choice, because it was either leave or stay and be less masculine, therefore more feminine. Because the way it works with those women, one has a PhD and the other has a master's degree, and they're great girls, and you know, there were things that I could not handle, but I'm not gonna get into that. But the thing was, it was crazy, because there's this dichotomy where they admired me for certain qualities that I may have. They really admired me and they were really complimenting me all the time and all that. But at the same time, they wanted a relationship, and they wanted it to be the way they want it. And they wanted me to follow their plan, and they wanted me to be on their program. And I felt bad. I felt constricted. I felt like, you know, they were trying to turn me into the woman. As a matter of fact, I told that to one of those sisters, and she started crying. She was like, no, that's absolutely not true. That's not what I'm doing. They don't even realize they're doing it. But the masculinity, the masculine energy that helped them go through the degrees, go through all the trials and tribulations to get those degrees, because it was tough. They couldn't help but bring that energy everywhere they went.
Yeah, subhanAllah, 100%. Oh my goodness, Sister Wad, let's round this off. The comments, as always, are just an amazingly huge part of the show. Brother Ismail, thank you for that, for sharing with us, inshallah, honestly, as you always do. I think we've all, and the thing is, I want to say, really from a place of empathy, I get it. I understand why women / sisters do this. And again, it's like sisters with high standards, right? Or with like a long laundry list of things that they want. The older they get, the longer the list gets. I get it. Because there's two things here. One is I want, Sister Wad, I'm sure you're with me on this, and all the sisters, whoever else is on here. We want sisters who have a healthy sense of self-worth, right? A healthy sense of confidence in how Allah has created them, right? And the gifts that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given them, and you know, the ability to believe in themselves and their ability to do whatever it is that they want to do, right? No one is taking away from that. I think for me, what becomes really sad is how we've been sold a faulty bill of goods. And we, along with all women in the world who have been taught, you know, the feminist, to look at the world through a feminist lens, is we've been sold a faulty bill of goods, right? We've been told to be a way, to do things, to say things, to want things, to work for things that are not in our best interests, fi dunya or fil akhirah. And we've been told that we can do that and not pay any price. no consequences. Hot girl summer, no consequences, right? Self-love summer, musharifa, no consequences. You know, in, you know, rack up tens, hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt, in student loans and everything like that, no consequences, right? Dedicate yourself to your studies and your career, and put off committing to one man. I'm going to say that specifically because when people are typically kind of out there, they are not celibate, right? They're not keeping themselves chaste. They're out there and they're doing what they do with the whoop whoop and the boop boop, right? So no consequences, though. You can do that. It's no problem. You'll still be able to find a man when you're ready. And you're going to find the man who fits you, the one who loves you the way you are, you know, the one who only wants what you have to give, and musharafa, all of this stuff, right? So this faulty bill of goods is something that we have been sold. And I still see sisters trying to hold on to that, trying to make it real. And right now what's happening is there's this big clash, right? Where men, I think, specifically Muslim men, are feeling confident enough to say, actually, no. I think there was a time when brothers kind of were on the back foot because it was like maybe the way that imams were talking or the way that the cultural narrative was, you know, brothers had to kind of, you know, play it down. But now brothers are openly saying, no, that's not what we want. No, we don't care about that. And it's causing people to lose their minds because like, what do you mean? Everything I believe doesn't, it's not true. You mean to tell me Khadija wasn't this boss babe? You mean tell me, you know that, that lovely thing that they like to say, oh, how the Khadija was a, like a businesswoman and a boss babe, and the Prophet Muhammad was her employee. Take that, you know? And it's like, dude, you've got no context here. Subhanallah al-Azim. But anyway, let me stop talking because we want to finish this live stream. Guys, put those super thanks and those super chats up there. Fling them up. We've only had one this show, which is not like you at all, mashallah. So if you're benefiting from the content, if people have been dropping bars and being amazing guests, please do show your appreciation with your coffees and your super thanks and your super chats, inshallah. Sister Wad, give us the parting word, sis.
In the end, when we discuss these type of problems, we are never attacking certain individuals who find themselves in situations unwittingly. We are trying to spread awareness in order to make a change to the system that has put all of this in place. And I'm very happy, like you said, men are starting to wake up. And that's a good thing. Many people think it's a bad thing, but there's a lot of problems, underlying problems, is coming from both the cultural and Western sides. That so we need to unpack it. And the first step to causing a change is to discussing it. A lot of women feel attacked when we come and we speak about this. When I come and I say, you have to stay at home with your children, at least for some time, an adequate amount of time in order to create the bond of trust, they feel threatened by it. I am not attacking you. I'm not saying, I know it's hard, you have to go out there. You're doing a great job as a mother. But that does not take away from the fact that if you're not with your child, you're going to sell that bond of trust to whoever you're putting your child in the care of. There's always a price to pay. And so what society has said is it's okay. To all these problems, okay. We don't need to discuss the problems. We don't need to find solutions to the problems. It's okay just the way it is. And you even hear it from an individualistic perspective where you are amazing just the way you are. You don't need to change yourself, even though we as human beings were always constantly in need of improvement. So when you're always hearing that everything is okay, there's no problem, and that's the point. We've always been told that everything is okay. The system is, everything is just, everything is okay. You don't have to worry about it. Now when people are starting to realize there's a problem with the system, there's a problem in society, there's a problem with individualism, there's a problem with feminism. I mean, we've always been told that feminism was empowerment, that it was okay, that it was the greatest thing that's happened to women. When you're being told that that's wrong, that that's not the way it is, they begin to feel threatened because they've always been told that this was okay, that this is the way it is. But what we are trying to do now is to recognize these problems and to go against the society that is actually benefiting from these problems and to say that, look, we're not judging you individuals, but we are causing a change that will essentially, if we are discussing these things and able to make a change, you will benefit from that. The first step is to take that accountability and to not justify it. Lots of women, even men, justifying it. Don't justify these problems. Let us discuss them. Let us find solutions to these problems. And most of all, let us defeat individualism and work as a community together. And the only way that we will be able to actually make a change is when we, and this is why I love it when like-minded people come and discuss things, because now we are coming together. Now we are actually wanting to make a change by joining hands. We are much more powerful the more that we are. But for all of those women, my biggest advice is number one, do not have homophobia. Do not fear the home. Do not let society tell you that the home is your worst enemy, that you will never be happy in the home, because the workforce isn't any better. Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to say that the home is heaven, right? Yeah, it comes with pain and its struggles, but that was something that you could actually cope with, that you can actually bear. Allah created you that way. He made us as women nurturers. And so to abandon that and then to go into the workforce, because that's what society said was okay. Then you reach 40 and 50 and you want a child, you want a family because that's in your nature. And you sit down and you realize, oops, too late. And that's the problem. Yeah. A lot of women, and Sister Naima, I'm sure you know this, a lot of women realize way too late what they really want.
Yeah.
And it's always in tune with their fitrah, because I always say that the truth is self-evident. Even in deviance, the truth is self-evident. So what is in the deviance of women abandoning their nature and abandoning motherhood and degrading it, they realize later on that they actually want to be mothers. They actually want men. They actually want to be taken care of. And it's too late because the men have gone for all the other women. And so before you fall for that, take a step back, sisters, and realize. And also, another thing I want to say, when you're looking at feminism, don't only look from a social perspective, also look from an economic perspective. Who is benefiting? You know, capitalists are not benefiting from women sitting at home working, and I mean sitting at home and taking care of their children. They want the children into the schools so that they can raise them to go back into the corporate world. And then they have the men and the women in the corporate work as well. So they have them, both the men and women, that's double the taxes, and they lower down on the wages because there's no more in-demand jobs. There's a whole lot of people who can do the jobs, so the wages aren't so much anymore. And then they have children here, a whole lot of children who are growing up, right? And this is a whole in-depth topic that we can get into some other day. But what I'm saying is understand that it's not always what's beneficial for you. What society gives to you, you have to scrutinize. And you, especially Western society, many times it's all about the self.
No, 100%, sis. Jazakallah kullu khair. Thank you so much. Sorry about that cutting off there. Thank you for the $10 super chat. MashaAllah, jazakallah khairan. Just want to address this point before we close out. Fiza says, many celibate working, studying women out there, please don't promote this narrative, Sister Naima. No. I know full well. My apologies if it didn't seem to be the case. My analysis was on a macro level for society in general, right? And also what is being encouraged. Celibacy is not being encouraged. Being chaste is not being encouraged. And I know that there are brothers and sisters who manage to hold it down and who do study and work and don't indulge in zina. The shame, the part that is sad is that although, mashallah, tabarakallah, yes, those of you who've managed to hold out, because we know is that if brothers, if you're on, these apps or if you're meeting people for marriage, I'm sure you have met 40-year-old virgin sisters. I'm sure you have. I don't discount that. It's just such a shame that those fertile years were not put to better use. And this is our qadr at the end of the day. If this is what we have to cope with, this is the qadr. However, and so I don't want anyone to take it personally, it just is what it is, right? But what we do on this channel is we have these conversations so that we can make choices differently moving forward. So we can look at our kids and the way we encourage our kids to move forward. And I remember on one of the lives with Brother Nasser, remember, guys, I broke down the stages of how we can reverse the negative trends. One of them was, firstly, taking ourselves to account, right? Taking ourselves to account first. What decisions did we make? Why? Which of them were sound decisions that we would make again, and which were a mistake? Because we make mistakes, right? Every single one of us, we're going to make mistakes, and some of us are going to pay dearly for those mistakes. That's life. It is what it is. No one's here to shame you, because there ain't nobody perfect around here. Not one of you, not one of me, not one of my guests, nobody. But what we get to do here is we get to own our mistakes. We get to hold ourselves accountable, and we get to take the wisdom from that lesson. Because for sure, there was a lesson in everything, right? There was absolutely a lesson in everything. But if you don't learn the lesson, then it was a wasted opportunity. And if we don't teach anybody, if we don't pass it on, if we don't make this something that other people can learn from, then of course they're going to make the same mistake. And we don't want that. Right? We want to see change moving forward. We want people who have been listening to these talks, who've been thinking about these topics, to inshallah, start to move differently in their own lives, and also, you know, look at how they do things with their children, right? So inshallah, hopefully that will be beneficial. Lots more stuff coming up in the chat, but we are not going to address this today. Okay, guys, so I will see you. My next live Candid Conversations is going to be on Friday night, inshallah. So I look forward to seeing you all there. Please come with your comments, with your concerns, with your suggestions, and be sure to like this video on your way out and subscribe to the channel if you haven't. We will see you on Friday night, inshallah. To my sister Wad, brother Ismail, and everybody else who jumped on, jazakumallah kullu khair. You guys made it lit as always. I'm going to close out with an Australian accent for that sister Fiza who gave the super chat, sister Fatih, who gave the super chat, because I'm going to Australia next month, inshallah. So we have a women's conference that I'll be speaking at in Melbourne and Sydney. So the details of that will be on YouTube this week. But if you are in Melbourne or Sydney, or you have people in Melbourne or Sydney, make sure that they don't miss the Salam conference next month, inshallah. So now we're going to close out. A big salam alaikum to every one of you came over here. Thanks, mate. You made it amazing. You always make it amazing. We love you. We'll see you on Friday night. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.